Good morning. I'll introduce myself. My name is Aletha Akers. I am an obstetrician-gynecologist at McGee Women's Hospital at the University of Pittsburgh. I'm going to be talking today about providers' perspectives on counseling parents about adolescent preventive health. Let me give a little bit of background context for this project. We did some qualitative research with parents about 2 years ago in Allegheny County, which is the county in which the University of Pittsburgh is located, where we were trying to understand essentially the process by which parents try to educate their children about reproductive health topics, some of the challenges and the resources they use. And it was clear that they did not think that their pediatric providers were really a resource for them. And so we put together this project to try and sort of understand from the provider's perspective what some of the challenges are with regards to trying to really provide anticipatory guidance to parents. So by way of background, the vast majority of morbidity experienced during adolescence is preventable. And it's for this reason that clinical care guidelines really recommend that healthcare providers educate both parents and adolescents about adolescent preventive health topics. However, very little prevention topics have actually been discussed with adolescents, as is evidenced by multiple studies that have been done over the past few decades. Very few studies actually examine how providers go about attempting to educate parents. The rationale for educating parents is that the process of educating parents can provide them with both skills and knowledge that would be necessary for them to really help nurture better decision making amongst their adolescents with regards to preventive health topics. It's clear that parents do want to receive this information and they want to receive it from the providers, but as I mentioned in our preliminary studies, they certainly don't feel that they were receiving that in our local area. So we had three main objectives for this study. The first was really to explore how pediatric providers go about counseling parents about adolescent preventive health. And the second was really to try and compare sort of the counseling approaches that are used by general pediatricians versus adolescent medicine specialists. And we have both at our institution. And no studies that we were aware of have previously really compared those two, although the assumption is that adolescent medicine providers would be better at doing this. And the third was really for us to try and identify better ways of improving education delivered to parents by providers. So we conducted our study between June and October of 2009. We did semi-structured interviews with pediatric providers at the University of Pittsburgh Children's Hospital, and we recruited providers from two clinical settings, from our general pediatric practice clinics, their outpatient clinics, as well as from our adolescent medicine, again, outpatient clinics. The study was approved by the Institutional Review Board at the University of Pittsburgh. In order to be eligible, providers had to either be a physician or a nurse practitioner who saw adolescent patients in their clinics either for well child visits or for general outpatient services. And I guess I should clarify why these two criteria were there, because one might assume that that's the case for most providers. However, we have a lot of sort of subspecialty, either clinical settings or other outreach services, such as services provided at our local juvenile detention center, for which they would certainly be seeing adolescents in a different context without parents present. So providers had to be seeing their patients in a setting in which both the adolescent and their parent might be able to attend. In terms of recruitment, we initially made presentations at the division meetings for both the general pediatric division and our adolescent medicine meeting, and then followed that up in about 2 to 3 weeks with email recruitment flyers and regular mail recruitment flyers that then invited the providers to call us in order to schedule an interview. For all of the providers who decided to participate, they were asked to complete a brief survey prior to their interview, and that survey collected basically some sociodemographic information, so age, race, marital status, educational status, as well as provider characteristics, so whether the individual was a physician or a nurse practitioner, a general pediatrician versus an adolescent medicine specialist, and then what their training background was. And then we also collected information about their practice characteristics, so what was their weekly patient volume, as well as what proportion of their patients were actually adolescents. Regarding our interview methodology, all of the interviews were conducted in whatever was the location that was most convenient for the provider. So usually it was their academic administrative office, but sometimes if they were off-site, it may have been a conference room in whatever was that local resource. Most of them lasted anywhere between 30 and 90 minutes. They were each compensated $100 via a gift card for their time. And we asked them basically four semi-structured questions. The first was really to assess their approach to discussing adolescent preventive health topics with parents and what topics they usually discuss. And then we also asked them to identify what were some of the key barriers to and tools for educating parents. In terms of analysis, all of the interviews were audio recorded and transcribed into Microsoft Word, and then we imported those into Atlas TI, which is a computer program used for managing qualitative data. We performed content analysis, whereby two research staff independently coded all of the transcripts, which meant they first performed open coding, where they read all of the transcripts line by line to identify themes related to our topics of interest. They then came together to compare the themes that they had identified and to perform axial coding, where they grouped those initial themes into categories, basically major themes and minor themes, and then developed a code book out of that, which they used to then recode all of the transcripts. And then we used the constant comparison method, which basically means they then went and compared the themes that arose in each individual transcript across each of the individual transcripts, as well as compared them between physicians and nurse practitioners or by provider gender. So we had 13 of 25 providers enroll. Seven of them were pediatric providers, all of whom were physicians, and six adolescent medicine providers. Actually, that should be eight adolescent medicine providers, six of whom were physicians. You can see that the pediatricians, on average, were younger than the adolescent medicine specialists. The vast majority of our participants were female, Caucasian, and were married. And the vast majority of our adolescent medicine providers worked full-time, in contrast to slightly more than half of the pediatric providers. You can see that approximately half of the general pediatric providers had completed their training relatively recently, within approximately 0 to 2 years prior to the interviews, in comparison to our adolescent medicine specialists, most of whom had been in practice for either 6 to 10 years or greater than 10 years. In terms of patient volume, on average, our adolescent medicine providers were also seeing a slightly higher clinical volume. And in addition, as one would expect, the adolescent medicine providers were seeing a larger proportion of adolescent patients compared to their colleagues. So we were able to identify, sort of looking through the provider narratives, really three main counseling styles that providers used, and these styles were really reflected both in the narratives of the general pediatricians as well as the adolescent medicine specialists. So the first approach was really sort of a standard prevention script, whereby the providers generally had a set script, a basic set of prevention topics that they went through with each adolescent and their family, as is evident by this quote by a male pediatric provider who said, "I talk to all kids about sexual behaviors, drug use, even suicidality and depression. I talk about that with everybody." This is in contrast to our second style, which is really providing tailored prevention messages. And these providers really stated that they tended to select the topics that they talked about based on topics that either the adolescent or their parent raised as issues they wanted to discuss, or topics that the provider thought was important based on their familiarity with the family. This is evident by a pediatric female physician who said, "You have to tailor your topics to what's the current issue going on in that family." And then the third category was really to refer to adolescent medicine. And clearly this would not occur at necessarily every institution, but as I mentioned, we have an adolescent medicine service. And this education style was not really just to automatically refer all topics to adolescent medicine specialists, but really that these providers indicated that there was a select group of topics that they simply did not feel comfortable providing any counseling about or referrals for resources, other than to simply say, if this is the issue, we really recommend that you go and see an adolescent medicine specialist. As is evident by this pediatric female physician who said, if I really feel like I'm not in my comfort zone, I would refer them to the adolescent doctors. And I should say that the adolescent doctors for them are one floor below, so that's a really easy referral for them in the same building. It obviously doesn't guarantee that the patient is seen the same day, but it's nearby. So what barriers do we identify? This slide's really just meant to demonstrate sort of the main topic areas around which barriers were noted. So some were certainly at the provider level, some were at the parent level, many at the health system level, but certainly also some at the adolescent level. And what I'm going to do now is show you a series of slides that really highlight some of the key sub-themes that came up in each of these categories and a couple of representative quotes. So I'm going to start at the parent level because providers sort of universally felt that some of the challenges really came from the parents, the biggest one being the parental presence at the visits. So a lot of parents don't actually come to the clinical visits with their child. So obviously it's hard to provide counseling if the parent isn't there. This is much more common for older adolescents who also tend to be the population who are most at risk for a lot of the adverse behaviors and outcomes we're trying to prevent. In addition, parents oftentimes come with their own agenda, so topics they want to talk about, which makes it hard for the provider to then talk about what the parent feels is urgent as well as the topics that the provider wants to discuss. And then receptivity was a key issue, as is typified by this quote from a female adolescent medicine nurse practitioner who said, "Sometimes you have parents that say from the outset, I can take care of that. I don't want you discussing those kinds of things with my child or essentially with me." Provider level barriers, the main ones were really that providers oftentimes assumed that parents were aware of a lot of these issues and that it really didn't make sense for them to take their time to talk about wearing a seatbelt, talking to your kids about drugs, etc. In addition, as has been noted in a lot of studies, some providers simply didn't feel comfortable providing a lot of counseling around a lot of these topics or didn't feel like their training had adequately provided them to do so. But a really key issue that came up across almost all of our providers, regardless of their training, was the need to have a rapport with a parent and their child before one can really comfortably provide counseling. So this female pediatric physician said, "I regret that we don't have continuity with every family because I think it's much easier to talk about these issues. There's so much that goes into those conversations. If you don't have a foundation, it's much harder." So lots of barriers were identified at the health system level, including a lack of time in the visits, a lack of reimbursement for counseling services, and then lots of logistical issues, such as visit frequency. So it's recommended that adolescents have one preventive visit a year, and there's a vast number of topics to be covered during that one visit. And then visit structure, and I think that this quote really sums it up. So a pediatric female physician said, "It's the whole arrangement of how we examine adolescents. You get the history from the parents, see the child alone, give them their anticipatory guidance during their physical exam, when the provider's alone with the kid usually. You don't have a whole lot of time when you regroup, meaning bring the parent back in, because you're usually talking about immunization or referral needs. You don't then go into another litany with the parents that you just talked to the child about. So I think we probably do neglect the parents a bit." And then finally, at the adolescent level, really visit type was a major issue. So again, guidelines really recommend one prevention visit for adolescents. What adolescents oftentimes come in for is not their adolescent well-child visit, but acute care visits, school physicals, or immunizations, and there's simply not time built into those visits to do a lot of counseling. In addition, if adolescents have comorbidities, providers really spend a lot of their time trying to focus on those types of issues and dealing with those, and again, don't have a lot of time to really discuss general prevention topics. And then confidentiality was a huge issue. Thinking back to the quote I just read to you, if a provider talks about, for example, drug use, sexual health issues with an adolescent, and then brings the parent back in and tries to talk about those, it raises flags for the parent that maybe these are issues that are of concern for my kid and they haven't talked to me about it, which has the potential to breach the confidentiality between the provider and the adolescent. So this pediatric male physician said, "You know, it's a partnership. The child needs to understand too that we're there to help as a part of their safety net. What I say to them is I'm never going to go behind their back and call their parents later and say that this is what we said. But it's really a tight balance between meeting the adolescent's needs meeting the parents' needs." And a lot of providers in the interview simply said, if we have to choose, we meet the needs of our adolescent. So what are some of the key findings with regards to how we can actually improve education that's delivered to parents during these visits? So one, you have to have the parents attend, obviously. Two is really patient confidentiality, really getting at those issues of rapport, which helps the providers to know what topics are really critical to discuss. pre-visit assessment form. So a lot of the providers said it would be really helpful if parents and their adolescents really filled out a form ahead of time that indicated what topics they'd want to discuss, because it would then allow the provider to really know what things they should be covering, and they would be able to cover those up front when the parent is in the room before they ask them to step out. And then finally, providers felt like they really needed some standardized resources that they would be able to provide to their parents. A lot of them said, when we're dealing with newborn screenings or younger children, we've got a set of resources. You know, at the six-month visit, these are the handouts that you give to the parents, but we don't have an equivalent for adolescents. So handouts, books, websites, other tools. So in summary, developmentally appropriate medical and psychosocial risk assessments and service delivery to adolescents is highly variable. General pediatricians clearly feel less comfortable providing a number of these, particularly psychosocial risk assessments. However, the counseling styles that both the adolescent medicine providers and general pediatricians use are very similar, and the barriers that they identify are also very similar. Key implications, obviously creating incentives and a way of really including parents into the visits is definitely helpful. And then a lot of the other implications are really more sort of systematic and complex, and really, I think, require a partnership between a lot of different parties. So one, we need to find ways of really promoting coordinated comprehensive care for adolescents, so we're not having to see them at one visit, refer them to the mental health specialist somewhere, refer them down to adolescent medicine for their sexual counseling, refer them somewhere else for their eating disorders, etc. A place where adolescents can come and really receive all of their care in one place. Another issue is really making the care affordable, accessible, and acceptable, and particularly addressing issues of confidentiality. There needs to be a greater focus not just on disease prevention, but also on health promotion during these adolescent visits. And finally, really finding ways of nurturing a collaboration between adolescents, their parents, and the providers that addresses adolescents' needs, but also respects their need for autonomy. So I'd like to acknowledge a number of people who helped out with this study, and I'd be happy to take questions at the end. Thank you.